Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The early 20th century avant-garde composer Arnold Schoenberg was also an accomplished painter. I mention this because there's a surprisingly long tradition of musicians and visual artists being the same people. Sculptor Robert Longo is also a guitarist. So is filmmaker Jim Jarmusch. Producer Brian Eno does digital art. Still, most of these folks are best known for one thing, and the other stuff is kind of an interesting footnote. That's not the case with Marcellus Hall. Music fans may know his albums, both solo and with his various bands, but a whole other group of people know him as an illustrator of children's books, among other things, but he also did a much-talked-about cover for The New Yorker this summer, the issue with the city bikes on the cover. Today, his two distinct audiences get to hear Marcellus Hall and the Hostages playing live in our studio. Last week on Soundcheck, we met another person who lives in two worlds. The actor, Oscar Isaac, reveals himself to be quite a fine blues and folk guitarist in his latest role.
If I had wings like Nora's dove, I'd fly the river to the one I love. Fare thee well.
The new Coen Brothers movie, Inside Llewyn Davis, has opened here in New York with a wider release set for later this month. It tells the story of Llewyn Davis, a musician struggling to make it in Greenwich Village during the early 1960s, before the arrival of Bob Dylan that would put that whole folk music scene into the national spotlight. Now, Llewyn Davis is a fictional musician. As the film star, Oscar Isaac, told Soundcheck recently, Llewyn was inspired by a real-life folk music godfather, Dave Van Ronk. But the connection's pretty loose, and trust me, Llewyn Davis is the kind of character that only Joel and Ethan Coen could create. But as musicians go, Llewyn Davis is a pretty great one. And that got us thinking about all the great bands in music history that were only bands on screen. Joining me with some of their favorites are Kristen Meinzer, producer with WNYC's The Takeaway, and Rafer Guzman, film critic for Newsday. Together, they host the Movie Date podcast. Guys, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Hi, John. Thanks, nice John. To be here.
Now, before we get to your own picks for great fictional or movie-only musicians and bands, what did you guys think of Llewyn Davis?
I loved the movie. I thought it was great. I think Oscar Isaac is great, who plays his own guitar and sings.
Terrific, yeah.
Beautiful voice. I loved it.
Every time he was singing, I just thought, this is fantastic. I hope that the soundtrack sells like gangbusters, and I'm willing to bet it probably will. I think the music is fantastic in this.
There is one song in particular that even before the movie came out was getting a little bit of online buzz. Take a listen to this.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4.
1 second, please.
Please, Mr. Kennedy.
Up on.
I wanna go.
Don't
show
me in the outer space.
Oh, please, Mr. Kennedy.
Uh-oh.
I don't wanna go.
Don't show me in the outer space.
I sweat when they stuff me in the pressure suits. Bubble helmet, flash board and boots. Nowhere up there in gravity zero. I need to breathe, don't need to be a hero. And are you reading me loud and clear? Oh, please, Mr. Kennedy.
That is Please, Mr. Kennedy, Oscar Isaac in the role of Llewyn Davis. That's Justin Timberlake in the role of Jim, his musician friend who has written this little novelty ditty. And Adam Driver, for me, makes that song with his,
Sure.
And you can tell also that it's such a fake political song. It sounds like satire, but it's actually making no point whatsoever.
Don't send us to outer
Don't
space.
Send us to outer space. That's one of the things I love about that song.
So, Oscar Isaac and Adam Driver might have, walked out of, the sound set that day
you know, thinking, I could do this for real.
Yeah.
But now, Justin Timberlake does do this for real.
Yeah.
But the musicians that you guys have identified for us today are musicians solely on screen. Kristen, let's start with you.
Well, one of my very favorite fake bands of all time, The Wonders, originally spelled O-N-E-D-E-R-S, later spelled W-O-N-D-E-R-S. This is an early 1960s fake band in the movie That Thing You Do. They're a group of college buddies who play together. Before you know it, they're a one-hit wonder. Mm-hmm. They never planned it. And the movie really does a great job of capturing that one-hit song that everybody loves and the rest of the songs that are kind of fine. But That Thing You Do was written by Adam Schlesinger.
Schlesinger, yeah. From Fountains of Wayne.
Yes, Adam Schlesinger from Fountains of Wayne. And it's so poppy and it's so well written and it sounds so much like it could be a Buddy Holly song or a Beatles song from the early 1960s that you leave the movie theater thinking, hold on, where have I heard that song before? And then you realize you've never heard it before you saw this movie.
Good thing it is a good song because you hear it a lot.
Over and over and
over
again.
It's their only song.
They're one-hit wonders, and they are called The Wonders from the film That Thing You Do. Clever bit of musical time travel from Adam Schlesinger. Now you got me stumbling over his name, who is a real musician. He's from the band Fountains of Wayne, but writing for the fake band called The Wonders, who exist only in this 1996 movie called That Thing You Do. The song was nominated for both a Golden Globe and an Oscar, and actually charted on the Billboard Hot 100, which...
It deserved it. In my opinion, this is such a great song. Can you imagine having a great party and this is one of the songs that's on your iPod? Well, you wouldn't even be able to tell it's a fake song.
So now, That Thing You Do, I mean, this is, you know, this is a movie that people might be familiar with. Rafer, your first pick for us comes from a movie called Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains. Where is this movie from?
This movie was never really properly released. You could date it to maybe 81, maybe 82. It played in a handful of theaters, but remained unseen for years and years. It was a movie about a fake punk band called The Fabulous Stains, started by a girl from a small town named Corinne Burns. She changes her name to Third Degree Burns, as you had to do back then in those punk days. And, you know, it's the story of her trying to be a nonconformist and also be famous and be part of the music industry, which I think is the great push-pull tension in punk rock, you know, throughout that whole movement's history. Lou Adler, the music tycoon, was the director, the guy who owned the Roxy Theater in Los Angeles, and it was written by none other than Nancy Dowd, who had just won the Oscar for the screenplay for Coming Home.
Wow. So why was this never released properly?
Well, Nancy Dowd was not happy with the way it turned out. She took her name off it and used a pseudonym, Rob Morton. The movie was very choppily edited. It had kind of a rushed reshot ending. I don't know why it never seemed to really catch on. I think if you were a punk purist maybe at the time, because it was so early, punk was still happening, you might have got hung up on some of the silly details. Diane Lane, very young Diane Lane, who plays Corinne Burns, dresses and, you know, she puts a little skunk stripe in her hair and wears like some hefty bag, you know, couture. So a lot of it looked silly, but I just really felt like it's a great punk fable to me that I think it really gets the spirit of punk rock correct.
So the band is called The Fabulous Stains.
Correct.
And are they also one-hit wonders? Is there a song that kind of recurs in this?
Well, what she does is she steals a song from another band called The Looters that they tour with, led by, and this is a great cast, led by Ray Winstone, later of Sexy Beast, and two of the actual Sex Pistols, Paul Cook and Steve Jones, are in the band. And So the Looters are this kind of clashy punk band. She steals a song of theirs called The Professionals, written by the two Sex Pistols in real life. And that becomes their signature song. And yes, it does. They are kind of a one-hit wonder. They play this punky song. You know, things go wrong. The end of the movie, which I always thought was a real downer ending, is that it ends with a slicked up, popped up MTV version of the song. And when I was a kid, I was outraged. I thought, that means they sold out. Mm-hmm. Later on, I got to interview Lou Adler, the director, and he said, no, it's a triumph. They've triumphed. They've succeeded. And I just thought, you really burst my punk bubble there, Lou.
This is from the movie Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains.
Yeah, I wanna see the world for free, but I don't like the things you see. Up to 3-4 really ain't my style. Call up, calling us again. The commies are coming, did I hear you say? Who cares, who knows, maybe I will one day.
The band, which existed on screen only, is called The Fabulous Stains from the never properly released punk film Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains, which is another example of a band that exists only in the movies. That's what we're talking about on this portion of Soundcheck with Kristen Meinzer and Rafer Guzman, the hosts of the Movie Date podcast for The Takeaway. You can find a link to Movie Date on soundcheck.org. You know, that has a kind of verisimilitude in the sound. You know, the rhythm guitar isn't quite on the, you know.
Those galumphing lyrics.
Yeah.
It sounds like music I actually listened to in the late 80s and early 90s.
Yeah. Well, I know that doesn't sound like much, but the movie got played on cable here and there in the 80s, and it was Kathleen Hanna from Bikini Kill who saw it and really took inspiration from that movie. When I interviewed her years ago, when they finally did release this properly on DVD, she told me she still to this day will sign her autographs, The Fabulous Stains, hoping that she'll get other girls to see the movie and start their own bands.
Wow! So this band was sort of in part responsible for the whole Riot Girl movement in the 1990s.
It's like the most influential rock movie that nobody's ever seen.
No one's ever seen. Listeners, do you have a favorite fictional band from the movies? You can post a comment at soundcheck.org or call us at 866-939-1612. All right, Kristen, your turn. What's next?
I love Alex Fletcher. Now, not everybody knows who Alex Fletcher is. He is the fake He's a character in a movie called Music and Lyrics. He's mm-hmm. both a solo artist and the lead singer of a band called Pop! Exclamation point. And they're kind of a send-up of Wham. And what's great is we see Pop in the 80s playing songs that sound just like Wham songs. And then we see him in the 2000s trying to make a comeback. And he knows the only way he can really succeed with the comeback is by kind of hitching his star onto one of the kind of girl pop stars of the time, kind of a Britney Spears sort of post-Disney star girl, writing a song, doing a duet with her. And what's perfect about this movie is all of the songs sound exactly like they're of that era in pop music. One of them from the 80s is so completely, transparently a copy of Careless Whisper that I love, called Meaningless Kiss. And Meaningless Kiss even has a sax solo in it. It's just fantastic.
So this is Alex Fletcher.
Yes.
Played by?
Hugh Grant.
Hugh Grant. Is he a good singer?
He's fine, but it's not even really about whether or not he's a good singer, because you don't have to be a great singer to be a great pop star. And I think that has been shown over and over again in real life pop music.
All right. So clearly a send up of the Wham hit Careless Whisper. This is Alex Fletcher from the movie Music and Lyrics.
Out of the corner of my eye, I felt a connection. I don't know how, I don't know why.
shouldn't have stayed when I saw you there with another man. But as we slipped away, I thought I heard you say this wasn't part of the plan. Just a meaningless kiss. It wasn't supposed to end up like this. Just a meaningless kiss.
How did they avoid a lawsuit? I mean, that's... It's like so...
But isn't
close
it so fantastic? And it just sounds completely accurately of its era. And that's what I love about that song. That's what I love about his comeback song later in 2007 with his pop star duet. Everything sounds completely like it was manufactured to reach the biggest mass audience of pop music.
So now we were talking before about how, you know, with The Wonders, with that song, That Thing You Do, it's a really great piece of songwriting that does the same thing, captures that period of the early 1960s, and that was Adam Schlesinger of Fountains of Wayne. Do we know who wrote the songs for this movie?
Well, the second song in the movie that I want to talk about is called Way Back Into Love, and Adam Schlesinger also wrote that one.
Really?
Yes, that's his song that he does the comeback with the 2007 pop star who's kind of a Britney Spears send-up. And that song actually charted all over Asia. It was a huge hit in international markets.
I've been hiding all my hopes and dreams away, just in case I ever need them again someday. I've been setting aside time to clear a little space in the corners of my mind. All I wanna do is find a way back into love. I can't make it through without a way back into love.
So our pop star, Alex Fletcher, who's way past his sell-by date, has hitched his wagon to this rising star named Cora
Corman, and she's played by Haley Bennett. And, right. Of course, she's the girl who wears short shorts and midriff tops, and he's the older guy who's trying to sing with her on stage. And what's great about this song is it sounds exactly like the song of that era. The band kicks in at a certain point. There's a certain point where they sing, and then there's a pause, and then the band explodes again, and they gaze into each other's eyes. It's just like American Idol or a post-Disney star movie.
Very Diane Warren.
Yes, all that.
So Way Back Into Love becomes a hit in real life, off the screen in Asia, as
yes,
you were telling
huge
us,
Kristen. Hit, all, especially with Korean K-pop artists.
Okay. I guess that sort of makes sense. Hugh Grant in the role of Alex Fletcher, the fictional solo artist and frontman of the equally fictional band Pop in the 2007 film Music and Lyrics. Guys, how are these movies? I mean, we're talking about the songs. How are the actual films they come from generally?
Well, I love mine. I think Fabulous Stains is a great movie.
And I also really love Fabulous Stains too.
Sure. Oh, and also That Thing You Do is I really fell in love with that movie. I thought it was wonderful.
It's such good fun. It's a Tom Hanks movie, actually. Mm-hmm. He directed it. And I think Music and Lyrics is a hoot also. It's really just making fun of how the music industry works and making fun of manufactured pop stars and yet also paying tribute to them. And it's a really difficult fine line to walk where you're simultaneously poking fun at something and celebrating it, and it does it well.
Well, talking about manufacturing pop stars, Hollywood has done it over and over again. Fictional bands, fictional solo artists, and Rafer, you've got one more for us.
One of my favorites has to be Dewey Cox of Walk Hard, The Dewey Cox Story. This was John C. Reilly playing a thinly veiled version of Johnny Cash, who we just seen his story in Walk the Line when this film came out.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also in this film kind of a rock history zealot. He goes through many changes from his Johnny Cash mode to a sort of David Bowie phase to his, you know, roller skating disco phase. He goes through the whole gamut, and it was just, I think even though the movie was not a huge commercial hit, I think for rock geeks, this was just pure gold because it just touched on every base. It touches on, you know, there's Bob Dylan, there's The Who, there's, you know, Brian Wilson, just the Beatles. Everyone gets some kind of skewer from this movie, and I thought it was a great satire.
I've been trying to hold back on just blurting out, Spinal Tap! Spinal
yes,
Tap!
Of course,
Spinal
of
Tap!
Of course.
But now I have to say, you mean he's like Spinal Tap, where he changes his musical style to fit what's going on?
He does a he does a little bit. Spinal Tap did a little bit of the change, but this is really just like just blatant.
Oh, but Spinal Tap has like the early 60s stuff, and then
they do have Listen to the Flower People. That's true.
Listen, what the flower people say. Listen, it's getting louder every day.
All right, so Dewey Cox. The film is called Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. So the song is Walk Hard.
Walk hard, hard down life's rocky road.
The song is Walk Hard, and one of my favorite scenes from Walk Hard is when Dewey Cox, who's young guy, sort of naive, and just kind of getting into the musician life, and he's got a friend played by Tim Meadows, who throughout the film keeps taking drugs, and as soon as Dewey Cox discovers what's happening, he says, what is that stuff? And Tim Meadows says, you don't want to do this, Dewey. It's cocaine. It makes you feel fantastic. It makes you feel alive. You can do anything. Don't do it, Dewey. So, of course, in this instance, Dewey Cox takes the cocaine and winds up inventing punk rock.
Get out of here, Dewey.
What are y'all doing in here?
It's called cocaine, and you don't want no part of this.
Cocaine? What's it do?
It turns all your bad feelings into good feelings. It's a nightmare.
I'm thinking maybe I'd like to try me some of that cocaine.
That's great stuff.
It's great. It was co-written by Judd Apatow. I think it's one of his best works. I really do.
So that's John C. Reilly in the role of the fictional singer Dewey Cox.
That's right.
In the film Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. So now this is kind of getting onto a meta level, because we're talking about music that exists only in film,
right?
And this is a movie that's kind of a satire of
yes.
these music movies.
Yes, and also I think of the biopic genre itself. One of my other favorite things about that film is, Johnny Cash had a brother who died, and of course his father blamed him for that a little bit. And in this film, everything is, to use an expression, amped up to 11. So in this film, it's not just that his brother died.
That's a Spinal Tap reference, folks.
That is. It's not just that Dewey Cox's brother has died. He accidentally cut him in half with a machete. And that of course, is why his father blames him for his brother's death. Everything in the movie is at that level. It's fantastic.
We're talking about the best movie musicians, great bands that appeared on screen only, and sometimes maybe better than the real thing. Some of these songs actually did hit the charts, as we've mentioned. Kristen Meinzer and Rafer Guzman are the hosts of the Movie Date podcast for The Takeaway and join us occasionally on Soundcheck. So far, I'm hearing a lot of agreement from the two of you on the merits of these songs and these films. So let me throw out, I've mentioned Spinal Tap, and I assume we'll all agree that that is one of the crowning achievements of Western culture.
Absolutely.
All people love Spinal Tap.
But let me throw out another, perhaps more divisive movie, and that is Rockstar.
Oh, my God. Kill me. I hate this movie so much. I hate everything about this movie. I hate the music in the movie. The only good thing about the movie is Marky Mark, of course, doesn't have a shirt on half the time. So if you like Marky Mark without a shirt, you have that. But then you have the other 99.999% of the movie that you have to deal with, which is just torture.
I fell in love with Rockstar when I saw it. I thought it was fantastic. And I had no expectations to do so.
And shouldn't have any expectations.
I mean, Mark Wahlberg, it didn't look that promising. Honestly, I don't know why I went to go see it, but I thought it was just fantastic. It's the tale of a fan who becomes the singer of a real rock band, just like Owen Ripper did for Judas Priest.
Right. So for folks who don't know that story, I mean, that is a real live,
yes.
like unbelievable story of,
yes.
of a guy who's a big fan of Judas Priest. And when Rob Halford leaves the band,
yeah,
this guy becomes the replacement.
Right. He was in a tribute band. And that's exactly what happens to Chris Izzy Cole, Mark Wahlberg's character. He's in a tribute band for Steel Dragon. And of course, when the lead singer of Steel Dragon bows out, he takes over. I just thought it was such a great tribute, not just to the era of hair metal, but also to the rock and roll cautionary tale.
Is there a little wish fulfillment going on here for you, Rafer?
Of course.
Your love of this movie.
If listeners can't see me in this sort of fro-ish hairstyle that I have, but if I could have those kinds of locks, I would be rocking out still.
Kristen Meinzer and Rafer Guzman, they're the hosts of the Movie Date podcast from The Takeaway. Find a link to Movie Date at soundcheck.org. And listeners, if you have a favorite fictional band from the movies, post your comment there at soundcheck.org or leave us a voice message at 866-939-1612. We'll leave you with a little bit of the music from Chris Izzy Cole, played by Mark Wahlberg in Rockstar. Kristen, Rafer, guys, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, John.
Up next, live music from Marcellus Hall, a name people might recognize from his work as an illustrator for The New Yorker and The Wall Street Journal, or from his longtime career as a band leader and solo musician. He and his band are up next. And our occasional series, That Was a Hit, looks at the unlikely tale of a dancing duck. All of that coming up on Soundcheck.
Well, it's cold and you're bored, counting the smart cars on 94 when you dream.
The 12 days of Soundcheck start today. That means that every day, every weekday until Christmas Eve, we're giving away 12 of our favorite tracks recorded live here in our studio. That's through December 24th, and that means that for just a few more hours at soundcheck.org, you can download, for free, today's song from Iron and Wine. It's called Winter Prayers.
Slide down south when once in a while your confidence leaves you like smoke falls out her red mouth. That's
singer-songwriter Sam Beam, a.k.a. Iron and Wine, singing right here in our studio earlier this year. Add this track to your music collection before midnight tonight by going to soundcheck.org and visit our site every weekday up until and including Christmas Eve to find out what track we're giving away next.
I'm friends with people who I don't even know. Where does one turn after the afterglow?
Well, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. When we last checked in with Marcellus Hall back in 2009, he was leading a double life as an illustrator and a musician, and embarking on his first solo album after fronting the indie bands Railroad Jerk and White Hassle. In the years since, both of his careers have blossomed. He's out with his first children's book as illustrator and author. He drew one of the most talked about New Yorker covers of the year, and his latest album comes out this week. He and his band, The Hostages, are here in the Soundcheck studio to play some songs from that album, which is called Afterglow. This one's called Floating. Here's Marcellus Hall and The Hostages.
I'm floating, yes, I'm floating on the surface. I'm floating, and I'm trying to drown. I'm spinning. Spinning in
Floating is the name of the song. That's Marcellus Hall and the Hostages here live in the Soundcheck studio. Marcellus Hall singing and playing harmonica and guitar. And what was the whistle thing there?
It's something like, I think it's from a kid's store or something.
Like a nose whistle or one of those?
I don't know what it's called.
Yeah.
They come in different colors.
All right. Last time you were here, you were just Marcellus Hall. Now you're Marcellus Hall and the Hostages. Any of these guys here against their will?
No. We just had a change of personnel, and I think we've gelled. Mm-hmm. And so the name has become this, you know, Mike Shapiro has joined on drums and Troy Fannin here on keyboards and guitar. And Damon was with us before, so
right.
More of a group.
Now, the album Afterglow, which comes out on Tuesday, is something that you fan-funded through Kickstarter. And
right.
there's a very funny, the video is still online, even though the campaign has successfully concluded, of you sort of lying on a psychiatrist's couch, you know, sort of whining about, you know.
How do I maintain dignity if I'm begging?
How do you mean?
Well, like, did the Beatles or the Rolling Stones use Kickstarter? You know, did they have to? What about, did Eminem use Kickstarter? What about that guy Bon Iver? I mean, I know. Amanda, what's her name? She got $1 billion doing Kickstarter.
I mean, were you conflicted about this whole thing?
Yeah, I was, yeah. I had labels in the past with my other bands, and this time around we didn't have the support. So the crowdsourcing seemed like a great idea, and I just approached it with a certain honesty and humor, and I hoped that got across. You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and you asked for $5,000 and got over $8,000. So,
yeah.
Well done.
Thank you.
Well played.
The album costed a bit more.
I would think so.
We aimed low, but
no. So, there it is. It's out. It's out on Tuesday. Called Afterglow, the latest from Marcellus Hall and the Hostages. Now, also this year, you had another cover. Of the New Yorker, and it was the city bike one, where, you know, the people are on the city bikes and the other people are looking through the gym window as they're on the stationary bikes. Very funny cover, much talked about. Are you a biker yourself?
I am, yeah.
Do you do city bikes?
I have my own bike, so I don't need to, but I love city bikes.
Are you a serious biker? Or?
I don't know. I don't have clothing with logos on them.
Right.
And, you know, Lycra shorts or anything like that. Okay. I don't have that. And I don't have a... Yeah, I use the bike to get around. Mm-hmm. I'm not hunched over with a fixed gear bike.
So that was sort of middle of the year, maybe the spring, right?
I think April or something like that, yeah.
Marcellus's cover for The New Yorker. And around the same time, your last book came out called Everyone Sleeps. You've done a number of illustrations for children's books before, but you wrote this one, right?
Right, yeah, it's a first for me.
You're an uncle now, right?
I am. Yeah.
Did you test drive this book on your niece or nephew before?
I did, yeah, last spring I did. And I was just in Minneapolis, where I'm from, and I saw my nieces and nephew, and I read a book to my niece, and not that book, but another one. But it's exciting to do that, you know?
Yeah.
It's new to me.
All right. Well, so a big year for you, 2013. The New Yorker cover, the new book called Everyone Sleeps, the album called Afterglow. You want to do another song from the record for us?
Yeah, we'd love to.
All right. This is called Soulmate. It's Marcellus Hall and the Hostages. They are playing an album release show on Tuesday. It's free, actually, a free show at the Rockwood Music Hall here in New York. Playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio today, once again, the song's called Soulmate.
We got together for a little get-together, and the Civil War started maybe 20 minutes later. We talked about the future, then we talked about the past. Then she handed to me
what I call
a half-empty glass.
Oh,
she had the reputation as an orgasm faker, and the tramp stamp on her back was a deal breaker. And though I was still getting over someone, I couldn't get past the fact that the losers had won. I want a soulmate, yeah, one to whom I can talk and relate. I want a soulmate. Shopping is her God-given right, and she feels that I will, but I only might. I told her before that I was only her friend, and then I kissed her on the lips. I told her again, I rallied all the troops, and I told them to go for it. Glory awaits you, I said, and so on and so forth. I'm of the mind that this is way too much. I said, I think this and that, well, and such. I want a soulmate. Can relate. I want a soulmate. Please don't make me wait. No, no. Said it was a means of survival. We were all still looking at an on-time arrival. We skidded to a halt, and I was on one knee. I had a ring in my pocket. She was flipping through a magazine. Please don't tell me it's a long shot. Of course I know 4 out of 5 doctors end in divorce. There are so many intricate webs we weave, but please help me to believe. I want a soulmate. I can talk and relay. I want a soulmate now. Please don't make me wait. Mm.
Marcellus Hall and the Hostages, live on Soundcheck with a song called Soulmate from the new album Afterglow, out tomorrow. And a free album release show, on Tuesday at Rockwood Music Hall here in New York. Marcellus Hall on guitar and vocals, Damon Smith on bass and vocals, Troy Fannin played electric guitar, Mike Shapiro's behind our drum kit. This one's called Still in Range. Marcellus Hall and the Hostages live on Soundcheck with a song called Still in Range. So, Marcellus, that song seems to be about how, you know, fads will come and go, but certain things kind of will remain. You know, certain things are just kind of classic, right?
Yeah.
So is that why you announced to us the imminent release of the new record, not through an email or by sending us a digital download link, but rather a handwritten note that looked suspiciously like quill on parchment?
It was. I didn't have any parchment, but yeah, it was a handwritten. I liked handwriting with a quill pen. And
is it the same quill pen that's in the video?
It is.
For Soulmate?
You're right, it is.
Yeah. So that video, which is coming out like soon, like any day now, right?
Mm-hmm.
It sort of combines your two careers, the illustration and the music.
Yeah, I've always been a little apprehensive and unsure of how to combine the two. That seemed to coalesce in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
I just we played the song and then I illustrated the lyrics live.
Right. Now, the last time you were here, you said that writing music and making illustrations, even if they were separate things, that they had some kind of connection. They spoke to each other somehow.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
How?
I think, like I mentioned last time, we talked about just for me the fact that rhythm, harmony, texture, composition—all these things that have to do with music apply just as well to when I'm doing a painting or a drawing, you know, and I think about those things as I do a drawing.
Mm-hmm. And you don't get the cover of The New Yorker if you don't have all that stuff, I assume.
I guess so, yeah. It's a checklist, yeah.
Marcellus Hall's new record is Afterglow, and it comes out on Tuesday, the same day as the free record release show at the Rockwood Music Hall here in New York. It's Marcellus Hall and the Hostages with us in the Soundcheck studio. Marcellus, great to see you again. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
He's no longer with us. I'm sorry to say. I know he won't miss us. He's gone away. He's taken his heaven. It was his to bring. He made us love him. Who made everything.
Up next, we'll find out how the hell a song called Disco Duck made it to the top of the charts. It's another That Was a Hit in just a moment on Soundcheck.
And now, Soundcheck looks back at the pop charts of yesteryear and asks,
That was a hit?
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
They're coming to take me away, haha.
Time for another installment of That Was a Hit, our occasional series about songs that have unexpectedly made their way to the top of the charts. Not too long ago, we spoke with Memphis music historian Robert Gordon about his book, Respect Yourself, Stax Records and the Soul Explosion. But there is a postscript to the Stax Records history that we just had to follow up on, and it involves a disco dancing duck. Now, to understand where this song came from, if such a thing is even possible, let's talk with Robert Gordon once again. Robert, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm smiling from that song, I got to tell you.
Now, I mentioned this is kind of a postscript to the history, the storied history of Stax Records. Tell me about Estelle Axton, the axe in Stax Records, and how she's involved in this.
Estelle had co-founded Stax with her brother Jim, Stuart and Axton, and they had something of a little bit of a rivalry between them, to where Estelle could hear these kind of unusual hits and would push for them to be released. For example, the Marquis' Last Night, one of the, you know, great instrumental soul songs of the era, no one was paying any attention to, but Estelle insisted that it was a hit. And sure enough, it was a huge hit. So she had a knack for sussing out what could be popular. And she always attributed it to her life as a sales clerk in her own record store,
yeah. So, but even with that vaunted track record, what did she hear in Disco Duck that made her think, oh, I can make a hit out of this?
Well, she gets bought out of Stax in 1969 and has to stay out of the record business, both retail and production, for 5 years.
Right, so she has a non-competition clause in her buyout.
For 5 years from 1969. So in 1974, she starts a new company, Freetone, and she's recording some country music. She's recording novelty songs. For some reason, she'd gotten onto this kick with animals. I forget the sequence of events, but there's Frumpy the toad or something. I mean, she was just trying anything, and there was this popular DJ in town named Rick Dees. Rick Dees
in Memphis.
So funny. In Memphis, yeah. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid growing up in Memphis, Rick Dees, so let's see, this song is 75, so Rick Dees probably went on the air in like 72 or so, and I would have been 11. And Rick Dees was so funny in the morning that we would wake up early for school to hear more Rick Dees. He got the mayor, who had this very deep Southern accent, to record four words for him. The mayor said, well, he said, "Yes, sir, Mr. Dees." And he said, "No, sir, Mr. Dees." And it was this thing that just, a madness that took over the city where people would be answering each other. You know, my dad would tune into Rick Dees. It was so funny. And at the dinner table, when someone wanted to say something, they would say, "No, sir, Mr. Dees." It just, you know.
But then he writes Disco Duck.
All I can think of here is to say that Disco Duck is the Vanilla Ice of disco. You know, I don't know how else to explain it. I mean,
so it was
why
meant,
did it be?
It was meant as parody, is what you're saying.
Well,
no, was it serious?
I mean, yeah, I mean,
was it sincere?
Well, here's the thing: I wasn't there. I don't know. I can tell you this: you know, you listen to that bit you played a few minutes ago. You hear those strings swelling and that, you know, sort of classic disco. It actually evokes Soul Train, you know, fashion. It's really fun. It is weird as hell that there's a duck, you know, quacking in the middle of things, but in a way, you know, this was the era of Disco Sucks and all that.
Right.
Now, granted, hearing this song, it's hard to argue. You know, I'm not sure which side this is falling on. And I just think it became popular because, one, it makes you smile. And two, it was a way to, because it makes you smile, because it's, you know, a parody, because it's funny, it was a way to enjoy disco, even if you hated disco.
And that is how a disco song with a talking duck hit number one, people, on the Billboard Hot 100 in 1976.
Went to a party the other night. All the ladies were treating me right. Moving my feet to the disco beat. How in the world could I keep my seat?
Number one on the Billboard Hot 100 in 1976, Rick Dees and his cast of idiots with Disco Duck. Yes, folks, that was a hit. Robert Gordon, the Grammy-winning Memphis music historian, explaining how that happened to us. It even made an appearance on Saturday Night Fever. So, you know, this was a big deal. Robert, what happened to Rick Dees after that?
Fame took its toll, maybe. Rick was on the second most popular radio station in town here in Memphis. He was the Avis, and and when he made a reference to his own song, they booted him off the air, and he was quickly picked up by the other, you know, the most popular teen pop radio station in town, and ultimately he went out to Hollywood,
hosted Solid Gold.
Hosted Solid Gold, had a talk show. I want to make one more Rick Dees note about the Disco Duck album, because I know you got it in your collection, John. And go
didn't
back
even know there was an album.
Go back to the first track on the album. Don't tell me that, John. I don't believe you. The first song was about Elvis, and it was the other really funny song on the album, not Disco Gorilla, by the way. This song was about Elvis, and it was called "I Ate Too Many Jelly Donuts."
So he did a whole album, and there was one other funny song on it, is what you're saying. I caught the subtext there. Now, Robert, as a Memphian, does it hurt that Disco Duck is one of the most successful records ever to come from your hometown?
I think it defines us as truly left field. And I'm happy about that. Pleased and proud. As Rufus would say, plum, pleasing, pleasure.
Rufus being Rufus Thomas?
Rufus Thomas.
The great Stax Records singer. And Robert Gordon is the author of Respect Yourself, Stax Records and the Soul Explosion. Robert, good to talk to you again.
All right, John, thanks so much for having me on.
On tomorrow's show, as 2013 winds down, we'll look at some of the bands you'll be hearing about in 2014, at least according to Time magazine contributor Melissa Locker. Plus, the Village Voice says that Joseph Koeckler was the best downtown performance artist of this year, whatever that means. We'll hear what Joseph Koeckler is all about when he visits our studio for a live performance. That's tomorrow. Don't forget that the 12 Days of Soundcheck started earlier today at soundcheck.org. Go to our website each weekday up until Christmas Eve to download some of our favorite tracks recorded right here in our studio this year. It's like an advent calendar for music nerds. That does it for the program today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.